and a good Sunday morning. Happy to have you with us out here at the Minnesota State Fair. It's 9 minutes past 7 o'clock on this Sunday. Isn't it the last day of August? August 31st. Hard to believe tomorrow's Labor Day. Well, it is our health radio hour. We call it a health head to toe. And this morning we are going to talk about overdose awareness. It is International Overdose Awareness Day. And we are happy to have with us here at the fair three very special guests. I'm going to start with Michelle. Michelle Hine is with Fentanyl Free Communities Foundation. She lost her son how many years ago, Michelle?
Five.
5 years ago. We also have with us on the stage here at the fair, Vanessa Marlowe lost her daughter. How long ago did Drew pass away?
It'll be 5 years next month.
5 years, and she started the Drew Isaac Foundation in her honor. And we also have on stage Matt Wiseman. He is a physician associate, a PA with mHealth Fairview, who specializes in addiction. Thanks for coming out to the fair with us.
Good morning.
And we welcome people walking by this morning if they want to stop by. We have some family and friends in the audience. That's nice to see. Let's start with you, Michelle, as we walked in today talking about International Overdose Awareness Day. What does that mean to you in the work you've done with Fentanyl Free Communities Foundation?
So International Overdose Awareness Day has been around for a long time, and it's not often that you hear about overdoses in other countries, because the U.S. has the worst overdose and drug use problem in the world. But it really is good to know that we're still talking about it in other countries, right? That we're talking about it everywhere, because it's definitely a scourge on our communities all over. And it gives another day for people to sit up, take notice, and maybe have that conversation and talk to somebody about it.
And Matt, I'll ask you, because you're a medical doctor or a physician associate and an addiction specialist, when she says it's a scourge, do you see sort of the gamut of different people struggling with addiction? So it's not just this particular population. Kind of talk about who's affected.
Yeah, absolutely. Michelle said, again, it's really nice to have International Awareness Day, because drugs are universal. They're universal in every country, in every place, in every to every culture throughout the world. And so, yes, awareness to overdose or even just substance use in general occurs every day at my clinic. Even for illegal drugs like alcohol and nicotine, we treat those conditions every day. Opioids, cannabis, every single one. And it really affects everyone. There's not too many places or people, I think, in the country for sure, that are not affected at least by a first degree or second degree individual in their community or in their life that has not been affected by substance use. And I see it every day.
Yeah, yesterday, or Friday, I should say, I volunteered at the Hennepin County Sheriff's Department booth, and we hand out there little pouches that you can get rid of your opioids and unwanted medications, because I'll ask you this, Vanessa, that getting into opioids, becoming addicted to opioids, a lot of people do start with, like, their grandma's pain medication, and then it evolves into something else. Tell us a little bit how your story unfolded and how your loved one passed.
My daughter, Drew, was 17 when she injured herself playing basketball in Cottage Grove, and she started using opiates from an injury. And it kind of went from there, taking opiates out of people's medicine cabinets, and it turned into a daily scourge on her life. So she started using opiates every day, and then it turned into buying fentanyl off the streets. And buying fentanyl off the streets caused her to not wake up one morning.
Yeah, because was she purposefully buying fentanyl, or was it an accidental thing?
She was buying what she thought was Percocet, which is another opiate, but it contained fentanyl.
And that happens. That's a story we've seen again and again.
Yes.
Where maybe a young person has thought they want to get a Percocet or something online, or I've heard that they can easily meet someone on Snapchat or what have you, mm-hmm. and go to the store, or not the store, but have a meeting place. Next thing you know, they get this Percocet. They think they're taking it for pain, mm-hmm. and it's laced with fentanyl, and then they're dead.
Yes, unfortunately, that has happened quite often with the onset of social media. Kids have access to drugs at an alarming rate. So I advise people to be checking their kids' social media, see what they're talking about on there, look for little symbols.
What are the symbols?
The symbols would be the little pills that are on the emojis. You can just Google DEA, and they have on their website, they have all the symbols for drugs, because kids are really smart these days, and they come up with little symbols and ways to hide what they're doing.
All right, you are listening to WCCO Radio. It is our Health Hour. We do it each and every Sunday at this time, and this week we are live at the Minnesota State Fair. It is International Overdose Awareness Day, and we'll continue with our conversation right after this quick break on News Talk 830 WCCO. And we are back. It is 19 minutes past 7 o'clock on a Sunday morning. I'm Susie Jones, and we are broadcasting live from the Minnesota State Fair. This week we're talking about fentanyl abuse. It is International Overdose Awareness Day, and I'll reintroduce our guest for you. Michelle Hine is with Fentanyl Free Communities Foundation. Vanessa Marlowe is with Drew Isaac Foundation, and Matt Wiseman is a physician's associate with M Health Fairview, in an addiction specialist as well. And we were talking a little bit about this day and what it's meant to do, essentially, is wake people up and get people talking. As you just heard Vanessa talk about her daughter thinking she was taking one thing, and then it turned out to be another. Remember, too, you are part of the show. If you have a question, you can call us at 651-461-9226. Again, 651-461-9226. We are live at the fair, and that means there's sometimes fair noise, and we have a big truck in front of us. So if you hear that, never mind. I think he might be leaving soon. But, you know, the fair is just kind of waking up. You get here this early, and you're going to get folks with trucks and garbage cans, and there he goes. So we're off. But, you know, we invited everyone to be here today on stage to talk about an event coming up next Saturday. Michelle, no.
September 20th.
So, I'm sorry.
Three weeks away.
3 weeks. That's a good amount for you to put this on your calendar. So, tell me what is happening at the state capitol on September 20th.
September 20th, we are holding, in conjunction, Fentanyl Free Communities and the Drew Isaac Foundation together, are holding a Walk for Lives. This is a national movement started by a man, Paul Martin, out in California, who literally woke up one day and thought, something needs to be done about this fentanyl crisis, and I'm going to start a foundation, and it's United Against Fentanyl. And guess what? He had not been directly impacted by this crisis. This is how passionate he feels about it. So he has started this movement to try to get people to be loud and louder and louder about the crisis, and he put this Walk for Lives together. We have over 200 cities already on board across the nation, and we'll all be rallying in these cities on September 20th. But specifically here, we will be at the Minnesota State Capitol Upper Lawn, Upper Mall, actually, I think they call it, from 11 to 2. We'll have resource tables. We already have over 24 community resource tables coming to offer their services in mental health and treatment and recovery, law enforcement, public health, public safety, etc. And then community organizations like mine and Vanessa's will also be there handing out free Narcan and the emoji drug sheet that you referred to from the DEA, and very, very important information. And then we'll have a short walk along the Capitol grounds as well.
And to you, Matt, I want to ask you about some of the treatment that's available for people who want to get off fentanyl. Another loud noise. I'm sorry about that.
That's a-okay.
So tell me about that. So a person gets addicted to fentanyl and they want to get off. Mm-hmm. Is it a difficult substance to get off, comparing it to like a nicotine or an alcohol?
I think once drug dependence occurs, and certainly addiction occurs, and I just want to make a quick point about the distinction between the two. So addiction generally occurs when someone continues to use continues to use their substance despite the harms that it's doing to their body, right? Either physically, so medically, right? They develop HIV from IV drug use, or socially, right? It can be strained relationships. They can lose their job. Their finances can be in ruin, right? That's actually addiction. On the other side, drug dependence is just the physiologic property that the drug has on the body, meaning that the person generally needs to continue the substance in order to maintain normal feelings, right? Their mental health is stable. They're not in pain, right? They sleep okay. And so any drug that causes dependence, which sometimes is prescribed drugs that we use for heart disease, right? Diabetes, right? If you take someone off their diabetes medicine, their diabetes can get uncontrolled. And so the idea here is that any drug that causes dependence is difficult to get off of, especially drugs like fentanyl, right? Opioids are notoriously hard to get to have people wean off of or to become sober from. But there are lots of different treatment options, and really that's what I'm here to hopefully talk about. There's treatment facilities or treatment programs that are not medication-based, right? These are therapy-based programs, group therapy, individual therapy, behavioral therapy programs, generally in the setting of like a detox facility where people can stop using their substances and be monitored in a safe environment. There are 12-step programs, religious programs. There's lots of different options for those individuals, and I think a lot of people know that those exist. What I do in clinic every day is actually prescribe medicine for people who have opioid use disorder.
And what is the medication?
The medicines are – the one that I prescribe the most is called Suboxone. It's actually an opioid itself. And really what the premise behind it is all about trying to stabilize the brain's – stabilize all the chaos that opioids cause. And when you think of kind of street opioids or even Percocet, okay, they act very quick and they turn off very quick. And so Suboxone, on the other hand, lasts a very, very long time and kind of protects people's brains and their bodies from if they were to use other opioids while doing it. And so you kind of stop all the chaos, the drug dependence. So you stop the chaos in their brain, they kind of become a more functioning member of society again, and then they're able to get rid of their addiction. And then over time, we have the ability to either taper them off of this product or they can continue it for life, just like anyone would do for their diabetes, controlling their diabetes that way.
And is it successful? How successful are people to get off that kind of opioid?
Yeah. We have a lot more tools nowadays than we did even a couple years ago, and so I think it's actually quite successful, especially if you find the right individuals who match up with where people are in their life or their treatment. Most people do need to be on a medicine like Suboxone for about a year, which it takes about 1 year for their brain to actually create their own neurotransmitters and be a little bit more stable. But after that period of time, I think it's really up to the provider and the patient on what needs to happen. But there are really good tools.
And then, I'm sorry, I'll just follow up with one more for you. Do different groups of people, different age groups, do better or worse with treatment?
That's a great question. Most of the time, the fentanyl crisis, or people who use illicit opiates, are young, right? It is a leading cause of death for people under the age of 40, and that's the population of patients that I see. For older individuals, it does get a little bit more complex, especially as they become more medically complex, right? But in terms of my population, the younger, they're generally of the younger crowd, and it works very well for them.
And I was going to add to Michelle and to Vanessa, one of the key points of the September 20th event is to denial, to stop stigma and denial. And how important is, maybe I'll ask Vanessa, stigma and having people say, oh, that's not, what could never affect me? Is that sort of what you're talking about there?
Yes, definitely. We need to get rid of the stigma, because the shame is what keeps people sick. So just brushing off what addiction is just not healthy. And working towards being able to talk to your kids about fentanyl and about addiction and about drugs in general is just really important, because it could prevent, and prevention is key.
Exactly. And, you know, put it in the head of the kid that it's possible.
Can I add something?
Sure, please.
So they wanted to, when Tyler was in treatment at Hazelden, they wanted to give him Suboxone, and he declined. And when he came home and was working his recovery, and he'd been sober for about 4 months, I asked him, why did you not take the Suboxone? And he said, because I'm going to be drug-free. And what that told me is that there's even stigma in the person who is struggling, because he was going to be drug-free. And we don't know
if he's
still
here, but in this country
that he would have taken it.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
I hear this practically every single day in clinic. Even people's family members who know that their loved one's life has been ruined, right? Ruined by substance use, still have that same idea of and same stigma around using a medicine to help someone essentially get rid of their addiction. And
what do you say to convince them take this step and try it?
And this is probably the hardest part of my job, right? Prescribing the medicine is not too difficult. It's actually trying to convince family members and people to actually do it. And what I try to tell them is that we're not substituting one addiction for another. What we are doing is yes, you are going to be dependent on a drug for a period of time, right? And that can be decided between all of us. But your addiction, the negative consequences, the strain on your life and relationships and even legal issues, right? That will go away. All that struggle, all that despair, that can go away with this option. And it's a really, really successful option.
And did Drew attempt to ever get sober, or was she just taking the pills for her pain and didn't think anything of it?
Yes, she did attempt to get sober. She went to treatment, and she got out and relapsed shortly after and passed away about 5 months after that.
It was just that quick. And, you know, it's just that gnarly. People don't quite... If you've never been addicted to something, it's hard to describe how powerful that talon is that gets into you. And that I'm in recovery myself. I'm pretty open about that. And so is my son. And we talk about the fact that your addict lies to you in your own voice.
Yes.
It convinces you quite efficiently to say, no, it's okay this time. This time is okay. Or I'm just going to do it once and then never again.
Right. And I'm in long-term recovery myself. And I also work in a treatment facility. And I've listened to people that are addicted to fentanyl say that it's like a voice that just keeps talking to them, telling them to go use again. And it's like a magnetic pull that just pulls them back to the drug. It's a horrible drug. It's one of the worst. It's highly addictive and very hard to get off of.
All right, it is 7:31 on WCCO Radio on a Sunday morning. I'm Susie Jones, and we are talking about fentanyl and the danger of fentanyl, and it is International Overdose Awareness Day. And if you're in the audience and you have a question, or you want to call in or text in a question, 651-461-9226. We're back after this. Hey! Good morning. We're dancing out here at the Minnesota State Fair. I'm Susie Jones. On this International Overdose Awareness Day, we want to start out by acknowledging that they are using a leaf blower about 300 yards away from us on the giant slide. They're about halfway done, but if you know what a leaf blower sounds like, it's a little bit like nails on a chalkboard. Would you say that sort of gnawing in the back of your head, like, mm-hmm. Please shut it off? But they have a job to do, as we say, so we're not going to bust their chops too bad this morning. We are happy to have you with us listening at home or out here at the fair. I'm Susie Jones once again. International Overdose Awareness Day. Michelle Hine is our guest, along with Vanessa Marlowe and Matt Wiseman, all talking about fentanyl. We invited you to also be a part of the show at 651-461-9226. And a texter wrote in, Matt, a short time ago, can you tell us what different kinds of opioid there are out there?
Yeah, absolutely. So there are many different types of opioids. Opioids technically are a were first found to be a naturally occurring substance right through the poppy plant. Okay, that's how it was kind of cultivated and produced a long time ago. Since then, we have created synthetic opioids, which have been created in labs, generally for medicinal purposes. So very common types of opioids. Opioids are broken down into short-acting and long-acting. But common opioids are, names of them are heroin, Percocet, Vicodin or Norco, oxycodone, hydrocodone, morphine, fentanyl for sure. There's tramadol. There's a few other ones that are out there that still exist. And now we're having several opioid kind of analogs that exist as well. Kratom is one that is around. Nitazenes, which is a drug that's being kind of cut into the illicit drug population now. All kind of augment or kind of are similar to opioids that exist.
All right. Thank you for that call. And do they run the gamut, Matt, of severity in terms of addictability?
All opioids are highly addictive. Every single one, regardless of the dose or the strength, but the strength of them do differ. Fentanyl being generally 30 times stronger than most opioids. The opioids are kind of categorized by equivalence, and so morphine is a standard that would be like the kind of base opioid, and then opioids are either stronger or weaker than those than morphine. Fentanyl being probably the most the strongest that exists. Yep.
What I'd like to remind everyone is that you never ever take a pill that was not prescribed to you directly by your doctor and received through a legal pharmacy. Our son, after he was in recovery for 4 months, decided to buy one pill from a friend, and his text said a perk, which it was a Percocet, and after he passed away, the toxicology report said he had 100% fentanyl in his system, no other drug in his system.
Wow.
So he was deceived to death, and that happens time and time again. Now, don't get me wrong. He was in recovery, and the greatest potential for dying from illicit street drugs is after you have been in recovery. I think Matt said it's about 50%. And so did he know fentanyl could be in something he was buying? Yes, he could, but that drug is so strong. Or I should say the disease of addiction is so strong that, like Susie said, that voice, that addiction, that addict's voice just said one more time,
one
he
more time.
Only bought one pill. And he bought it for $20, and today you can buy it for $4 to $6 a pill.
$4 to $6. And you were mentioning, Vanessa, as well, that you lost your daughter this way, and that when Snapchat, if people are familiar with Snapchat, it's an app that I would say the kids use. It's a ridiculous app. There's no conversation. You just take a stupid picture of yourself and send it to somebody. I said, is there a message? No, we just send a picture. I'm like, that's ridiculous. But you're telling me, so if you use Snapchat to do this transaction, there's no evidence of it. And so,
correct, there's no evidence of it. The snap goes away. I think it's 10 seconds, and it's gone for good. So a lot of drug dealing goes on Snapchat, whether it be opiates or other drugs. Fentanyl is also contained a lot in benzodiazepines. So people will go to buy, they call them bars, and they're looking for Xanax, but they're actually getting fentanyl. So it's another thing that people are passing away from is taking what they call bars.
And this is predominantly probably in the younger community where they
correct.
Just, again, think they're going to... What do they think? I mean, what's the high from that drug? Is it all kind of a similar high?
From my understanding, it is very similar. Both benzodiazepines and opioids are what we would consider downers, right? So they kind of suppress the central nervous system, which is why it's so deadly when they're taken together. And we try to mitigate that risk when we prescribe them together for a lot of patients. But yes, they're very similar, that they cause suppression of the central nervous system. And I don't exactly know what that high feels like, but it's certainly very strong. I mean, it is, it's just a really, really tough thing to replicate with other means or other medicines.
like meditation and taking a bath.
Yes, maybe other coping skills. Yeah.
Melatonin, which I, you know, yeah. Different ways to relax.
Correct.
If you are just joining us, we are live from the Minnesota State Fair this morning. We're talking about overdose awareness, National Overdose Awareness Day today at the State Fair. And we know that people are dying of opioid overdose every day.
Opioid overdoses have been a leading cause of death in the United States for years. We eclipsed, unfortunately, during the COVID pandemic, over 100,000 individuals passing away every year from opioid overdose. And again, it is majoritively people under the age of 40. When we look at all the other causes of the most common deaths, they're all chronic disease related. It's heart disease, it's stroke, Alzheimer's, right? Opioid overdose is the only one that affects young people, mostly.
651-461-9226 if you have a question for our guests. Again, we're live from the Minnesota State Fair. And if you can hear this, I apologize, but they are leaf blowing the giant slide. So we are hearing that in the background, and we apologize. But we're told they do it every morning, so good for them. Michelle Hines started fentanyl-free communities after her son died. Vanessa Marlowe's daughter, Drew, died. She started the Drew Isaac Foundation. What has the journey been like, Michelle, for you since your son died 5 years ago?
So once you come out of the fog, and it takes everybody different amounts of time, it probably took me about a year and a half, I knew I wanted to do something, and I got a call from an attorney in Anoka County who was retiring. He saw an article in the Star Tribune on something I had done. And he said, this is exactly what I want to work on. And he had not been impacted other than he had tried many cases of dealers dealing fentanyl. So we started the foundation together in February of 23. And it's did a lot of door knocking that first year. And let us in, let us in, let us talk to you, let us teach, let us educate. We also advocate at the Capitol. So there was a lot of days and late nights at the Capitol. But in the last year and a half, people are coming to us because people understand that they need to know, they need to have this information. So the Walk for Lives we're having on September 20th is the perfect opportunity for those that have been directly impacted to come out and scream from the rooftops, we need change in government, we need change at the local level, we need change. We need people, more importantly, to know, just the everyday Joe Blow, to know, you have to be careful if you're taking any illicit street drugs. Because we're talking about these pills, we're talking about fentanyl, but they're putting the fentanyl and the nitazenes in everything. So if you're a weekend casual cocaine user, be careful. Mm-hmm. It's probably got fentanyl in it. So this Walk for Lives also offers the people who, oh, they've never been directly impacted, but they know us and they love us, they can come out and support too and say, we are with them. We need this to stop.
And amen to that. Mm-hmm. And similarly with the Drew Isaac Foundation, kind of came out of that in a similar way, or how did you evolve into your foundation?
Absolutely. It came out of the pain of losing a child. I can't get my daughter back, but if I can help another family not experience the depth of pain that I have experienced, then I feel better going to sleep at night. So the Drew Isaac Foundation, we help people that are in substance use disorder either get into treatment, get services, get medical assisted therapy. We just work with people to come out of the pain of addiction and find a new way to live.
651-461-9226. A texter writes, I've been told that cocaine is not physically addictive. Is this true?
Cocaine is, of course, addictive. I don't think it needs us any more response than yes of course,
yes,
it is addictive. Just like any other drug that exists, even legal ones.
Yeah. All right, we have to take our final break of the hour. It is 7:46 on WCCO. Thank you again for people stopping by at the fair, and thank you for listening. We'll be back with our final segment right after this. And we are back. It is 7:50 on a Sunday morning, a beautiful Sunday morning here at the fair. The sun is out. People are arriving, getting their coffee and donuts, and joining us here outside the fair at our booth here at WCCO Radio. We have asked you as well, listening at home to and here, to write in your text questions, 651-461-9226. Texter writes, and this is a quick one, what is the name of the drug you are prescribing to get off opioids again, Matt?
Yeah, so the drug, the most common one is called Suboxone. Okay, it's a combination of two drugs put together. Other names exist like Subutex or Sublocade or Brixadi. Those are all them.
Great. Are you familiar with an herbal medicine called Kratom, and what is your opinion of it?
I'm very familiar with Kratom. Kratom is a substance that's sold at smoke shops that is a mixture. It's from Southeast Asia. It's a medicinal plant from that area of the world that has both opioid and stimulant kind of properties to it. And it's available at any smoke shop in the country.
And what is your opinion of it?
Please don't do it. We actually treat it. We treat it exactly, or we treat it similarly
to
individuals.
Laugh,
no,
yeah,
that's okay.
Okay.
Please don't do it. And if you are using it, we actually treat it. If you're using it and it is negatively impacting your life, similar to an addiction of another substance or another drug, please seek medical attention with your primary care provider or someone else. We actually treat it exactly the same as opioid use disorder, so someone who's addicted to fentanyl or Percocet or anything else.
Okay, last medical question. What are the signs of being dependent or addicted to alcohol? I can name some.
I think it's the
losing
same
your car.
And again, yes, all the signs would be, do you have cravings for a substance? Do you have withdrawal symptoms, which are generally symptoms of anxiety, palpitations, sweatiness, tremor, nausea, vomiting, diarrhea, even for opioids, runny nose, when you don't have that substance? Do you do things to seek out that substance that are hazardous to your own health? Are you do you have financial strain? Do you have relationship strain? Do you have other societal responsibilities that you're not meeting? All of those things are kind of signs of addiction.
Telltale signs. And just to wrap this up, because we have about 5 minutes left, if someone's listening and they have something or someone in their life that is struggling, or they think they're struggling because they're acting differently, what is something, and I'll ask all three of you, what is something that you might be able to do to gently offer them a solution without having them slam the door in your face? And I'll just point at you, and you have to give us the golden answer. You start, Matt.
Me? Okay. This is, again, the hardest part of what I do, is trying to convince people to essentially get help. And I think maybe years ago, we didn't have many tools to help people, and I think nowadays we have just a lot more of them, especially medication-assisted tools. They have by far the best evidence that they work for people to stay in recovery and to stay, to stay sober. And so just, I don't have a great tagline, and I bet Michelle might have one, but it's just about being open. Stigma is still probably the biggest barrier that I have to getting people to help themselves. And so it's just coming with it from an open mind, saying, hey, I love you. I want you not to die, because that's exactly what's happening in the opioid crisis. And just ask our doctor.
Okay.
I'll go next, because I think Vanessa might have a better answer than me, but I tried everything. Our family tried everything. Tyler tried everything. I think it. You pray a lot. You let them know you love them. And
I know.
I held Tyler one night and said, I just don't want you to die. He said, Mom, I'm not going to die. I mean, it's love them and get yourself some help. There are organizations out there like Thrive Family Resources, Recovery Resources. They help the family unit, because then if some tragedy should befall you, you might be able to live with yourself quicker and better than I did.
Oh, do you have thoughts on that?
I definitely have some thoughts on this. So a lot of times when somebody's confronted about addiction, families will come to them in a place of anger, and it really has to be coming from a place of love. So confront them with love. If you are not able to confront them, I'll do it for you. You can go to my website, drewisaacfoundation.com. So it's Drueisaac, Foundation, datin.com, and there is a help button on there, and I will reach out to them and talk to them about substance use disorder and help you along in the processes of getting them into treatment.
Someone texted a little while ago, where do I go for help? I mean, is it what number is there out there? I mean, there's a lot of help available.
There are so many numbers, so many different websites that you can go to, certainly these two foundations here. Just talk to their doctor. I know, and I will say the medical community is not the medical community absolutely has bias against people who use substances, certainly in the past. I do think that there is a new generation of provider out there that is open, like myself, who understands that addiction is not some moral failing. It is just someone who is dependent on a substance, and their life does not have to be ruined, or they don't have to die in order to get better. And so talk to their physician. It's really
that
available.
Important. Okay, we have 1 minute left. Give me the rundown on the September 20th event.
Yes.
Where, when, does it cost anything? Talk about it. And what are we going to learn if we go there?
Sure thing. So we are holding the event, the Walk for Lives, September 20th at 11 a.m. at the state capitol. Come on down. You'll be able to talk to community partners, treatment resources. We'll also have a booth to make signs to honor your loved one. We are going to honor the people that have been lost to substance use disorder. We're going to do a short walk through downtown St. Paul that will be similar to staging a demonstration to say that we've had enough. Fentanyl, we can't take any more of our people. It can't take our community. We want our community back.
And it's free.
Yes, it's absolutely
okay.
Free. Come on down.
All right, that's fantastic. And there'll be Narcan as well for folks?
Narcan and fentanyl test strips will be handed out.
And how important is that piece, the fentanyl?
For free. Harm reduction is key if you're using illicit street drugs.
And you save someone's life, right? You use Narcan, know how to use it, learn how to use it. You save a young person's life.
Well, thank you all for coming out. Again, Michelle Heim, Fentanyl Free Communities Foundation, Vanessa Marlowe, Drew Isaac Foundation, and Matt Wiseman, physician associate with M Health Fairview and an addiction specialist. Thank you all for coming.
Thanks, Susan.
Thank you.